Throughout my life, I've been very fortunate to have mentors. Mm-hmm. Mentors make you what you become. I truly believe that. So mentoring to me is very, very important. I try to mentor others. That's what we do at the Institute. Mm-hmm.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Health Technology Podcast. My name is Christine Minotto, and I'm the director of the UCSF Rosamond Institute at the University of California, San Francisco. Today, we are speaking with the legend in the medical devices world, Dr. Tom Fogarty. He's the founder of the Fogarty Institute for Innovation in Mountain View, California. Dr. Fogarty is also an internationally recognized cardiovascular surgeon. He has dedicated his entire career to improving patient care. He also invented the industry standard Fogarty balloon catheter, which you'll hear in this podcast. He has been awarded over 190 medical patents. He has also mentored countless startup founders. He has also received multiple distinguished awards, including the National Medal of Technology and Innovation from President Barack Obama. This interview was recorded in Dr. Fogarty's office, where he told us about his early life and career. We discussed about how he got his grit and tenacity and how he developed his interest in innovation. So if you like what you hear today, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. Well, thank you for joining me today and having me here at your office. A lot of people heard a lot about you, and I thought it would be interesting for a lot of our listeners to hear your story, like maybe your background, what's how you grew up.
Well, I was born in Cincinnati, Ohio. Unfortunately, my father died when I was about 7, and my mother was a widow, obviously, and she really, in those days, had no money. They paid women very little. And she was left with 3 kids and a mortgage on a house that was in the family. So we had a hard time. In fact, I was brought up on food stamps. But we made our way and had fine time actually making our way. I didn't feel disadvantaged. I just felt that's the way this is. And we'll have to do our best to get along. And that's what we did. So I had a good childhood. It was fun.
And so do you think because of your mother, the way she kind of raised you, like even though we don't have much, we have so much to be thankful for? I mean, what makes it fun?
Most certainly. She was my first mentor, actually, mm-hmm. and a very good one. She was tough. She was tough on me. I was known as the best brat in the community. And I certainly was misbehaving quite a bit, so she had her hands full. But I got to learn to be a little bit better. I used to get strappings. Do you know what strappings
were? No, what is that?
It's a leather belt used to strap a child with.
Like you hit?
Yes.
Okay.
And it hurt a whole lot.
I can imagine. So you got a lot of that.
I did get a lot of that.
And then did that change, help you or
No, it certainly helped me. I mean, it taught me watch out, you know, pay a price. And the price was a strapping. Mm-hmm. So I had a few strappings when I deserved them. Mm-hmm. I changed my ways as best I could. Mm-hmm.
And does she direct you in terms of like, she tell you like, you need to be good at school or what are the things that?
She told me I had to be good at school. I didn't accomplish that always. I got in a lot of trouble. I was known as the brat.
Yeah.
And the brat in school, the brat out of school. But I misbehaved a lot.
But you managed to get through school, didn't get kicked out.
No, I managed to get through school, but I was threatened to be held behind more than once. It never quite happened, but I escaped by the skin of my teeth.
You know how to manage to.
Yes. Yeah. And the nuns were very, very good, you know. And they taught me to behave too, so it helped my mother.
Uh-huh. So among the three siblings, which order are you? Are you the oldest or the youngest?
I was the youngest.
Okay.
Okay, so I had an older sister and an older brother. The sister was about 3 years older. My brother was about 10 years older than I.
Okay. And so they're not the troublemaker as you were?
They were not. Particularly my sister was very well behaved.
Okay.
I think my brother was a little bit of a rogue, but he did behave much better than I believe.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, you're a handful for your mother.
Yes.
And now, how did you, Matt, what brought you to become, do you want to become a doctor and, you know, continue with schooling, even though you barely made it at school?
Well, I did barely make it through school, but my goal was to be a professional boxer because I was a very good boxer. They used to send me off to a summer camp the parish did, and it was called Fort Scott Camp, and so they'd send me off their school. The parish paid for it, essentially kept me out of trouble. And what we did for entertainment, we played sports and we boxed. We had two boxing matches every week. And so I learned how to box there and became very, very good at it. And I won most of the time. And in the neighborhood, they had what they called backyard brawls. That meant the kids in the neighborhood would match one another in terms of age, weight, and experience. And the parents would come and watch the matches, and who won got the prize, which was money.
Okay.
So for me, it was fun. It was a sport, and I made money if I won. So it's a reward. I said, I could do this for a living. I'm good at it. So that was my goal.
And how much money was the prize at that time?
Oh, usually at the most, $10. That was a big, big bout. But that was a lot of money back then. A lot of money.
Yeah. Do you get beat up?
Oh, sure. I had my nose broken 3 different times. I used to lead with my nose. You're not supposed to do that, but I did.
And you still think it's fun that you want to continue doing it?
Yes.
And because?
I made money.
Okay.
I had fun. Uh-huh. I was a hero of the neighborhood.
And then what make you, you're obviously not a boxer.
No.
And what happened?
Right out of grade school, I got a part-time job, but it was full-time every day after school in high school. I would go to the hospital and work as an orderly. And by doing that, I met a lot of physicians, a lot of nurses. They were all very nice to me. And one of the physicians took an interest in me, a physician by the name of Dr. Jack Cranley. And he became my mentor. And it convinced me that I had enough brains that I shouldn't get them locked out.
Mm-hmm.
So I quit boxing and changed to maybe I could be a physician. And he encouraged that. So throughout my life, I've been very fortunate to have mentors.
Mm-hmm.
Mentors make you what you become. I truly believe that. So mentoring to me is very, very important. I try to mentor others. That's what we do at the Institute.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you picked the right mentor as well. And that must also have you have like understanding what are the things
well,
that you
I
need.
Well, I follow the mentors. I don't pick them. I follow them, and then they pick me as a mentee. They're my mentor. So as I've learned to realize, my best mentees have now become my best mentors because they currently know more than I will ever know about current technology. So I listen to them.
Mm-hmm. So when you say you follow your mentor, what does that look like?
Well, I follow him around. I watch what he does. I listen to him. I follow him. I follow his direction. I follow his sayings. I follow his values. Mm-hmm. I follow.
Okay. So you listen pretty well.
I could listen pretty well.
And so you finished high school. You go to college.
Yes, I entered college on probation because my high school grades were not very good. In fact, the principal of a high school called my mother and told her not to waste her money on sending me to college. One priest intervened and went to the dean of admissions at Xavier University and said, this kid has enough to pass what he has to pass in pre-med. So they allowed me to enter on probation.
Mm-hmm. All you need is one person who can advocate for you sometimes.
Well, actually, there was two. One priest did, and one other individual, Dr. Jack Cranley, once again intervened and told them, dean of admissions, he's got enough, he'll do it.
What do you think, for somebody like Dr. Jack Cranley to believe in you, I mean, he must have seen something in you that he believed in you.
Well, he figured out I was pretty smart. He also figured out I worked hard. And I think he felt that was enough, that this kid will make it. And I'm very grateful for that. And that's why I really emphasize mentors are very critical in determining what you become in life.
Yeah. So oftentimes people think about mentor when people are already at work. In your case, you got your you felt your mentoring became really early in your life.
Oh, absolutely.
It's something that I definitely feel that's so important to tell the young people.
Absolutely. The quicker you get a life experience, the better off you're going to be. Now, it's unfortunate that kids cannot work
this day
so early in this age.
Yeah. So how old were you when you first working for as an orderly in that hospital?
I was just entering high school.
Okay.
So I just got out of grade school.
And then how did you find that job? How do you pick
that? The nuns were sisters of charity. Sisters of Charities were sisters at my grade school. And the Sisters of Charity ran Good Samaritan Hospital. So that connection.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So once you finished your college, and then you know right then you want to go to medical school after?
Oh, yeah. And I got in medical school, University of Cincinnati, a local. It was a city college of medicine. There are no city colleges of medicine now, but there were back then in Cincinnati. They had the Cincinnati College of Medicine.
So when you're in college, you did better compared to when you were in high school. You were more serious.
I graduated summa cum laude, which was a great accomplishment considering everybody thought I was a dunce. Because I never paid attention.
Right. So, and then you went to medical school.
Yes.
And then you do, when does this whole invention, passion for inventing start?
I think it started very early in my career. I made it eighth grade. I came across the concept of a better clutch than a mechanical clutch. Well, there was one wealthy family in the community. His father was a pharmacist and his son name was Bill Ledford. We used to call him Pinhead instead of an egghead. We called him Pinheads back then. But Pinhead was very, very smart. And so he had a Cushman motor scooter. And it had a rear seat. And you hug on around the guy to hang on. There were only two gears. One was high. And one was low. You're going up a hill and high. You had to mechanically shift into low. And you would lurch ahead. And the guy on the rear would find his rear end in the middle of the street. That's not very good. Yeah. In fact, it's very painful.
Right.
And so the concept came up, can we transition it so the gears don't cause a lurch? a smooth transition. And so I worked as a kind of a cleaning up a machine shop, the shavings. And some of the guys in that machine shop said, do you want to learn how to use some of these? And so Pinna and I used some of those. We made a rough prototype, a bench model. It kind of worked. That's as far as we got. Uh-huh. But it was somebody else went on to develop at Cushman. And I never knew what a patent was, so I didn't patent anything. But there's such a thing as shop rights. If you work in a shop and you use the machinery that the shop owns, they own the technology.
Okay.
So they moved ahead.
Oh, and what did they do with it? So
they developed the Cushman clutch. Uh-huh. It was theirs. They owned it. Taught me a lesson.
Which is?
Don't use somebody else's shop to invent something. I made things myself starting in high school and college.
At your own place?
Yes. Like I made model airplanes. I'd sell them to the kids in the neighborhood for about 10 times what I paid for them because I could make them so they flew. Mm-hmm. A lot of kids couldn't do that. So it was a way to make money.
How do you know how to do all these? This is before you YouTube.
No, I was very good at my hands, find things, putting model airplanes together. Took skill, and I was able to do that because I was very good with my hands.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that is something that you, it's something that you naturally have interest in it, or somebody showed that to you and then help you build that interest?
Well, one of my cousins, my bigger brother, made model airplanes. So I kind of watched what they did and kind of said, yeah, I can do that.
So by watching, you see how other people do it and you make it better.
Yes.
Sort of things.
This podcast is sponsored by IO Life Science, a Silicon Valley-based medtech design and development consultancy, transforming your technologies into a unique healthcare solution. For more information, visit their website at iolifescience.com. This podcast is also sponsored by Brown Ratnick's Global Life Sciences Group, a team of legal professionals that helps life science companies, lenders, and investors around the world turn good science into good business. Learn more at brownratnick.com.
And then, so that started really early. And when is your first invention that's medically related? And what do you do with that?
That is the balloon catheter. Mm-hmm. And that started in my last year in med school. I was during my intern and doing a fellowship with Dr. Jack Cranley, where I actually developed the balloon. Made it myself, and Dr. Cranley was the first to use it. Mm-hmm. And after I thought about it, it took me about, I think, 6 weeks or 2 months to make it, and then he used it on the first case that he could after I made it.
Oh, wow.
As a fellow.
Mm-hmm. It's something that we cannot do it right now anymore.
No, you cannot. The FDA would take about 10 years to approve that technology now. There was no FDA then,
Right.
But if there were, it would have taken a long time, but there was no FDA, so we did not have to deal with the FDA. Mm-hmm. So we made it. I made it. Dr. Cranley did the testing. He had access to the bench model, and I did. Then he had access to the morgue. We tested it in dead patients. Then he had access to an animal lab that he was one of the first in the country, a private practitioner, to have his own animal lab to do experiments on. He really made my life possible. What I'm so proud of, he used to refer to me as his son. He already had 8 kids. Most were girls. 2 were boys. But anyway, I was proud of the fact that he considered me his son.
Mm-hmm. So when you create that first balloon catheter that he used, and what do you do? I mean, is he the only user after that?
No, he was the only user, but we tried to get it published. And it was turned down by every major surgical journal in the United States and offshore because the concept was so outrageous, they felt it was dangerous and inappropriate. In fact, we made a presentation a Saturday on Grand Rounds at the University of Cincinnati. The chairman of surgery said, only one so uninformed as a student would dare think of such a dangerous thing to do. Mm-hmm. Chairman of the Department of Surgery at the University of Cincinnati at Grand Rounds made that pronouncement in front of a large audience.
So that must have an impact for people not to want to try it.
Yes.
And what do you do with that?
We just kept persisting. We didn't pay attention because we knew it worked, despite the fact that most people thought it was outlandish and dangerous and not to be used by anyone, so they wouldn't publish it.
So you obviously keep on going. And yes. What is the breakthrough?
Finally, we got it published in a very new journal called SGNO. Surgery, Gynecology, and Obstetrics, a brand new journal. They published it. It was about a page and a half article called Surgeon at Work with one illustration. Then it went like that. Mm-hmm. You know when it really went like that?
When?
When a physician got sued for not using the technology. Isn't that interesting?
That's the way to do it.
Well, it shouldn't take that long for most people to understand, even though if they're very educated in the field.
Yeah.
It shouldn't take them that long. Here, this was a peer-reviewed journal, a very new one. Loyal Davis was the name of the editor. He was a general surgeon, but he said, this it will work. Mm-hmm. So he published it, a very small publication.
Mm-hmm. And do you think because the fact it's a new journal, then there's a lot more?
It was easier to get it published because they were looking for
material. So it must be a while before you get that, to find that journal. And along the way, what helped you keep on going?
Dr. Cranley said this works.
Mm-hmm. So, and then that kind of the beginning of a lot of the other invention that you have, or along the way while you're waiting for that particular procedure being published, do you have another invention coming along?
Well, no. I mean, I was busy and I was busy finishing my training in general surgery. I mean, you're up all night, you're working all the time. I did not have time for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I did take time out to continue to make some of those catheters for Dr. Cranley.
Mm-hmm.
In my residency, but reached a point where I couldn't do it anymore. By that time, I finally identified a company that would manufacture it for me.
So that concludes the first part of our conversation with Dr. Fogarty. Stay tuned for Dr. Fogarty interview part 2 in a couple weeks. Dr. Fogarty will share with us his journey in bringing his product to market, challenges he faced, and also his passion in supporting young entrepreneurs in medical devices space.